Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Monday, January 8th, 2024. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate your viewership, and we also appreciate your viewership at WVW-TV. As you know, WVW-TV is not a commercial network. We are a network that is not beholden to advertisers, but we are a network that generates fantastic First Amendment type and quality information that we share in the great marketplace of ideas so that our viewpoints can be heard. And I think that's an important contribution to the great society of the United States of America and our ability to communicate freely all sorts of different opinions and alternative ideas. And you get that in spades at WVW-TV because we are not beholden. We are truly, truly trying to publish the truth and make Americans and the world aware of what's going on. So thank you for watching WVW-TV. And of course, if you are interested in helping to support this effort and this ministry, you can certainly go to the WVW-TV Foundation and make a donation as a sponsor. We appreciate all sponsors, including our viewers, and we have many viewers that are very kind in helping us defer the costs of bringing this programming 24/7. You can see us live and you can watch reruns at 2 in the morning if you're sleeping, if you can't sleep. But at the end of the day, what we do here at WVW-TV is very important. We've been doing this since 2006, and we appreciate all of your support as well as your viewership. We also appreciate our corporate sponsors, and of course, the sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading, which is, as I like to say, a fine purveyor of precious metals. In essence, it's an American company based in Arizona, and they sell precious metals, tangible precious metals. So if you were thinking about adding tangible precious metals to your portfolio, and you're thinking about diversifying your wealth, then perhaps you should give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271. Or you can go to their website, swissamerica.com, and you can shop around and see what they have to offer. If you do that, use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, and you'll be able to see what they have to offer. And they basically sell gold and silver and platinum in various forms. You can get gold, silver, and platinum coins that are minted by the U.S. Mint and other mint, national mints globally. So you know that the quality and the quantity of your gold or silver or platinum is very high because they're basically minted by a government. You can also get pure bullion if you're interested in different sizes that go beyond the sizes of coins. You can get gold and silver bullion. Of course, they're happy to sell you that. And when you buy silver and gold bullion, one of the questions you should ask is the quality and the quantity of the gold in the block you're buying. If you're buying a 1 ounce block of gold and it's stamped 0.999 fine gold, you want to be sure that that block of gold, in fact, does weigh an ounce or a little more and contains a pure, regular full ounce. And also the purity is standardized at, you know, 0.999, whatever. And you want to make sure you're getting what you're paying for. And that's why when you call somebody or contact somebody like Swiss America, you know you're dealing with a professional dealer in precious metals. I mean, you can buy this stuff online and big boxes are selling gold. But at the end of the day, when you decide to diversify your holdings and purchase precious metals, you will want to have a very strong vendor. And that's important because when you're buying gold and silver and platinum, you want to make sure you're getting what you pay for. And when you call Swiss America or you go to their website, you can rest assured that that company's been in business a long time. They have a great reputation and they're experts in this space. They don't sell refrigerators and they're not selling paper towel and toilet paper. They sell precious metals. So if you're looking for a true, strong partner that can advise you and educate you and inform you, you should give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Ask them for free information. Tell them Dan Eastman from the Eastman Financial Report sent you. But at the end of the day, when you're looking to diversify your holdings, you want to have a trusted partner in that space. And that means people who've been in that space for a very long time. They don't just start selling gold and silver because they think there's a market. They sell gold and silver because they believe in the market. So give them a call. Swiss America is a great company. Go to their website, SwissAmerica.com. Shop around, see what you have. And don't be afraid to reach out and ask questions. There are people are there. They're trained experts. These are individuals who make a career out of selling and buying precious metals, and they know the market, they know the risks, and they know the information that they can share. So anyway, thanks Swiss America for their sponsorship of my program as well as WVW-TV. And I'll tell you, as we enter into 2024 and start talking about the economy, of course it's an election year, and that's always means once every 4 years the country goes crazy. If you're thinking about how do you protect your assets and your purchasing power and your buying power, and you think about, I need to diversify. Well, maybe you can't buy an apartment building in downtown Manhattan, but you can certainly diversify. And that's why you give Swiss America a call and ask them questions, or go to the website and ask them questions. So anyway, thank you, Swiss America. We appreciate your sponsorship, and we appreciate what you do for the gold, silver, and precious metals markets. Well, let's move on to the news. And of course, I started the show by saying this is Monday, January 8th, 2024. And in fact, it is. And if you remember, I started this series, this program, the last week of February. So I'm coming up on my first year anniversary as a financial commentator. But keep in mind, there are big stories rattling around at that time. And of course, one of them was we had three rather large banks cratering because the Federal Reserve was continuing to increase interest rates. And these three banks got caught in a situation where their reserves were shrinking as a result of interest rates increasing. And because you mark to market, you mark your portfolio to market every night before you close your bank, and you report your financial status, they found themselves with a little bit of a problem that put tremendous pressure on the banks, and those banks had to be rescued, and they were. They were all rolled into bigger banks, of course, and that's how the system operates. That was the big story because of the Fed raising the interest rates. And the second big story, and this is something I've been kidding about now for the fourth time since I started my show less than a year ago, is that, of course, the federal government of the United States operates on continuing resolutions. And what that means is they don't pass an annual budget into law, and the president signs the budget into law, and the government sticks to its budget, and only in a strange situation would Congress approve an increase in the interim, because the budget is the law. That's the way states operate. When Wisconsin passes its budget bill, it's all laid out. It's a gigantic bill, and the governor signs it. We've got this kooky little idea of line item veto in Wisconsin, where you can cross out words and letters and make the bill say something else. It's Google it, the Vanna White veto. You'll be amazed. But anyway, at some point there is a budget, and it's signed by our governor, and that's the budget. And if we were to go over budget, that would be a huge problem. Now the state does have some reserves, and in case of an emergency, earthquake or a big tornado or something. But at the end of the day, the states operate within their budget. And of course, what you'd like to do is spend less than you taxed so that you can build your reserve. So, it's a rainy day fund, and there's prudence in that. Let's say you build up your rainy day fund and it can become quite large, and the taxpayers will say, hey, you're taxing more than you spend, give us that money back. Well, there's some prudence in having a rainy day fund, because inevitably there's some blowout like COVID or who knows what. And at the end of the day, you have a little reserve, but that's how the states operate. It's truly a tax, take the money in and spend it model. Now, states sometimes will borrow money for a bridge or a highway, but that borrowing is encapsulated in the tax and spend. All of the interest on that debt and the payback of the principal of that debt is all calculated within the budget. And when the budget law is passed and signed by the governor and becomes the law of the state, or the law on the land, as long as you're looking at our land, effectively that is all budgeted for, and we run a responsible state. And we have 50 states, of course, and there's some territories, but let's just talk about the 50 states. And 48 of them do this every 2 years or every year without thinking. And, California and Illinois, they tend to struggle a little with their budget. But even then, the idea is it's recognized that it's a tax and spend model. But we don't have that at the federal level. And of course, the argument for not having a fiscal budget is that the world is complex, and we're the last remaining superpower, or we are the policemen of the globe, and we need to have infinite access to infinite money at the snap of a finger, so therefore we can't have a budget. We will just we fund programs, and then we pass continuing resolutions, so they just keep chugging along, and we add a little, we take a little, we move this, we move that, but we don't have a budget. We just kind of have this flow, and we just sort of regulate the flow a little bit, but it's just not a budget. There's no discipline. Well, why do I bring this up? Well, it's January 8th, Monday, January 8th, 2024. And this is now the fourth time that in less than a year that I have had to sit here and lecture about this problem with the federal government. And of course, what happened over the weekend, and this always happens on the weekends, it usually happens between Christmas and New Year's. Sometimes it's Thanksgiving. But the federal government will shut down if the Congress doesn't pass continuing resolutions. Now, if you remember, if you were watching me, or if you weren't watching me, you probably picked up a newspaper somewhere back in November, and there was a big debate about that in Congress. And of course, the government was going to shut down in March, and the government was going to shut down in July, and the government was going to shut down in November. And of course, we didn't hear any of that over the holiday season, like, oh, the government's going to shut down on the 19th. It's January 19th, you see, because in November, they kicked the can to January. Remember that? I said that, you know, they're kicking the can, so we won't hear about this during the Christmas and New Year and Hanukkah holidays. The holiday season, we're not going to hear about the government shutting down. We'll hear about it in January. Well, what happened over the weekend is that the Speaker of the Assembly, and of course the House of Representatives, the House of Representatives controls the purse strings of America. Okay, the budget, the money comes from the House, and they pass a bill, and then the Senate signs on, and then the President signs it. But instead of a budget, what they're doing is these continuing resolutions. Well, amazingly, after listening to this kabuki three times up through November, there is no stomach in Washington for having this debate every 3 months. So what's happened is that the House of Representatives and the Senate have come together jointly, and this is a miracle. This is the first time it's happened in a long time. Is that they have a bipartisan package to avoid a shutdown. We're not going to have the shutdown. We're not going to have this Chuck Schumer standoff with the Speaker Johnson. We're not going to do all that stuff. We're effectively going to have a bipartisan agreement that we're just going to send to the president, and, you know, and the president, I'm going to leave the editorial comment out of here. But the president will sign this into law, and these continuing resolutions will keep on. And of course, the question is how long? And we're coming up now on presidential primaries. I think the Iowa caucus is what, in a week or two, it's starting. The toboggan is at the top of the hill, and it's just now starting to move. And the only way, if you've ever been tobogganing, and those of you in the north of America know what I'm talking about, people in Texas probably don't do much tobogganing, but the point is the sled is going to start sliding down the snow, and once it starts moving, you can't stop it. I mean, everybody tries to stick their feet out, you know, and all you do is break your knee, but you can't stop the toboggan once it starts down the hill. Well, that toboggan is leaving the station probably this week, next week. So the point is, we're not going to be dealing with continuing resolutions where the government's going to shut down in an election year, because the primary season, the presidential preference primaries, ours is in April, Iowa starts next week. The point is, what they did is they very quickly came together and they said, we're going to just do continuing resolutions. So we're not hearing that. Okay. And that's the way our federal government works. There is no budget. There is no discipline. They just know that they have to patch this thing up, because the toboggan is leaving the top of the hill, and we're not having this debate in the middle of the primary season. And okay, so that's the deal. So what? All right, so why am I talking about this, other than the fact it's the fourth time it's happened in less than a year? Because it's the number. The number they're agreeing on, at least this is the news today, it might change tomorrow, is $1.66 trillion, okay? $1.66 trillion. Now, we know, if you've been paying attention to my show and perhaps listening to other financial commentators as well, that we have been running a deficit of $2 trillion. And when I started this show back last week of February, I was jabbering on about the $32 trillion, and I told you how long it would take me to hand you $1 trillion, and I went through that whole thing. And then, of course, we find out that it goes to $33 trillion, and now it's well on its way to $34 trillion. And that there was a $2 trillion deficit in the last
fiscal cycle, the 12 months, year over year. And of course, now we're looking at another $1.6 trillion. So I'm thinking that I've got about, oh, it's about, I've got about 6 weeks, maybe 7 more weeks before my first anniversary. We may very well be talking about $35 trillion in deficit rather than 34 or 33 or 32, which is where it was when I started. Remember David Stockman back in the Reagan administration was freaking out over a $1 trillion deficit. We should have listened. The point is that the federal spending is not slowing down, okay? If anything, it's accelerating. And what you're seeing with this joint bipartisan effort to hobble together $1.6 trillion, a couple of cycles, a couple of times back, the Republicans said, we're not doing anything unless you cut spending. And the Democrats are saying it's dead on arrival. We're going to spend more. None of that happened. They just all agreed. And you know why they agree? Because at some point, you look at these numbers and you realize that there's only one thing you can do. And it's not just necessarily an election year thing. It's just one thing that you can do. And you got to keep going. You've got to keep moving forward. And that's why they're going to pass these continuing resolutions. Because the last three times that this debate happened, there wasn't any political blowback. So if the people don't care, they don't pay attention, they don't know what that is. Nobody fathoms $1 trillion of anything. You can't even imagine a trillion, let alone 33, 32, 34. Those are small numbers. 33 isn't much. 32 is not a big number. 34 is not a big number until you add the trillion part on the end of it. Then it becomes a vast number that nobody can grasp. So it looks like 32. What's the difference? 32, 33, those are small numbers. Who cares? So I think what's happened is that Congress has figured out that just pass these, just pass them. Don't make political hay out of it. We're in an election year. It'll only penalize the incumbent and help the challenger. So at the end of the day, it's just happening. You think, well, that's politics. But when you stop to think about it, this is a national economy that's built on the backs of 330 million people. And you think, wow, 330. Now, that's a bigger number than 32, right? So 330 is a bigger number. But 330 million compared to 1.5 billion Chinese and 1.5 billion Indians, East Indians, and that's 3 billion people, and we're like a tenth of that. What we have is the world's largest federal deficit by a factor of 10. If you take, we're number one, and you take 9, 8, 7, 6, all, the 10 next, highest ones in the world, that is less money than ours. So you'd have to get start adding part of number 11 to effectively replicate the amount of debt that the United States of America has with only 330 million people. And it's not enough people because, half the people are underage. They don't pay taxes. So when you start thinking about who is the tax base that's got to support $34 trillion, that's 150 million people. That's not enough to support that kind of massive debt. So when Congress just continues with these continuing resolutions, they're not even doing the political kabuki because it's not registering in the polls. Nobody's paying attention to this stuff at the end of the day. Americans are just tuning out on this issue to their very great detriment because ultimately the people who will pay the price when this system readjusts, and these systems always readjust, the trees don't grow to the sky. You know, infinity and beyond was a clever little cartoon saying, but in the reality of human existence, when you're looking at $34 trillion in federal debt on the backs of 150 million plus, 160 million plus taxpayers, and then you add corporations, but corporations, that's a small smidgen of the total tax base. And even if it was the same, you absolutely do not have enough economic horsepower to support these levels of debt. So then the question becomes, and I keep talking about this, I'm trying to drive this point home. Sit in your living room on your easy chair, you're sitting there watching, what's this guy talking about? I want you to ask yourself these questions. If you have, let's just be real generous and say corporations and taxpayers, you can Google this number and find out. There's like 200 million taxpaying units, okay? And they have to support 33, 34, 35 trillion in debt and 1.66 trillion in deficit spending right now. What is the tax rate if you look at, the average income?
And what you quickly find out is that the income, this, remember my national, my ball of economic activity? Well, that ball contains the individual economic activity, our individual paychecks. And it also has all the corporate stuff, the business stuff, the nonprofit stuff. It's all in that great big ball. So if you look at who the taxpayers are, and they're not the nonprofits, they don't pay taxes. That's kind of an amazing thing. $1 trillion industry that doesn't pay taxes because they're doing good stuff. And then you got the private sector that pays lots of taxes, and then the people who pay lots of taxes, but the NGOs pay taxes. All that money, that's 100% horsepower behind those dollars. So ask yourself the question as you're sitting there in your easy chair, hey, who's going to pay for this? And what happens? And what happens if we can't? Does the tax rate go to 60%, 70%? Keep in mind, after World War II, with the highest tax brackets, the U.S. government taxed them at 90% of their income above a certain level was taxed away. And that's why it was a very egalitarian society in America, that the CEO could live up the block from, a midline worker. Because, the wealth and income were capped. It was very, very egalitarian in America until the Reagan administration, where they got rid of that. They lowered those top rates, and that was good. I mean, it was an explosion of development, and it would have been wonderful for the economy, except for the fact that when that 90% top thing or bracket was repealed, the deficits kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Because the government spends vastly more money than the people bring in. We're spending in our tax dollars right now. It's $1 trillion in interest on this $34 trillion debt. It's $1 trillion in interest, but then we still have the $1.66 trillion in spending on stuff, that the government actually buys services, stuff. So at the end of the day, when you're sitting there thinking, wow, I wonder how this plays out. It doesn't sound good. I wonder what's going to happen. You have to think. And you think about, well, are these guys going to raise your taxes to 90%? They could. I mean, you get the right dictator in power. And yeah, hey, boy, you're going to tax 95% of your wealth. You get to live on 5%. That happens. It may not happen in the United States, but, let's just look at alternatives. Okay, so politically, we can't tax you at 90%. Okay, we used to before Reagan came along, but we can't do that. And of course, instead of the top margins, we'd bring it right on down to the low margins. And you figure out that half of Americans don't pay taxes anyway because they don't make enough money to pay taxes. So where do you get the money from? Well, you can just continue to print and print and spend and print and spend and print and spend by selling debt into an ever-expanding global debt market. But at some point that becomes highly inflationary, and I'm staking my claim, or at least planting my flag on the theory that they will not be able to raise taxes to the 90% rate plus. Just politically, that probably isn't going to sell real well. So what do? It's the stealth tax of inflation that happens, and it happens because the system's out of whack, and it's going to happen, in my opinion, because we are 330 million people in a globe of 6 or 7 or 8, billion people. We are, we ain't the big dog we used to be, okay? And the problem is we're still spending like we were. We're still spending at World War II mentality. No matter where we are on the globe, no matter what we need to spend, we're going to spend all this money. And, they obviously don't care where it comes from. They don't care. That's $1.66 trillion to fund this gap. And the Treasury, poor Janet Yellen, she's got to run out there and run around and peddle bonds to try and convince some, greater fool to, here's a bond, give me money, I've got to fund this. Congress just said $1.66 trillion, that's a lot of money. She's out there selling bonds like crazy. And of course, the world is watching this and it's starting to ask questions. Saying, well, wait a minute, you only have, 150 million, 200 million people or taxpaying units, and you add up all that debt, and you find out that you'd have to tax them at 90%+ forever for 3 or 4 generations just to pay off last year's spending, the accumulated spending. Then there starts to be some questions asked. And I noticed in a story today that I was, doing my my prep here, a case prep, but or at least my lecture prep. But the Dallas Fed president, remember, these Federal Reserve regional banks are important people. You remember my lecture about how the Federal Reserve system is structured. There are 12 regions because they didn't want to concentrate it all in New York, because everybody in America, in order to approve the Federal Reserve system back in when it was created in 1913, they wanted to spread around the country to diversify that power, diffuse the power. Well, all right, so there's 12 regions, and of course Dallas has a Federal Reserve. New York is the important one. That's the one with the permanent seat on the Federal Market Committee. But the Dallas Fed president comes along and makes a statement over the weekend, which was very, I found it, I just happened to be stumbling through some interesting reporting that I tend to follow. And her concern is that there's a concern about liquidity in the debt markets. And that's a thing. And I think when a Federal Reserve president says, boy, there might be some concern about liquidity within the debt markets, people hear that. They say, wow, what's that all about? Well, let's stop and analyze that. Let's think about what that means. The debt market, of course, is vast. And the United States, by a factor of 10, perhaps, it's the 10 next indebted countries are less than the U.S. debt. Okay, we're up there. We are the top dog. And it's a vast market. As I pointed out last week, there's $2.7 trillion of Social Security Administration money that's invested by law in government debt. That's $2.7 trillion, and we know there's $34 trillion in debt because that's how much debt's outstanding. It's a vast market. Well, what does liquidity in that market mean? And that this is critically important. And liquidity is important for you. Whenever you invest your money anywhere, liquidity is important. If you buy a house, you want to make sure that you can sell that house if you had to and go buy another house or whatever, get the money out. Same thing with if you were to buy a car and you wanted to sell your car and go back to cash. The stock market is the epitome of liquidity. When you buy stock that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ or the big national international markets, there's a presumption that you can, and if you're a small investor, not a big investor, but the little guy, you know, you want to buy 100 shares of your electric company, you click, 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 and you buy 100 shares. And you want to sell it 2 days later, click, 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 and they're gone and the money's in your account. That's liquidity. It's how fast can you go back to cash? And liquidity is very important. And the same thing with bond market. If you buy a bond today and interest rates go down or up, the market value of that bond is going to go down or up, inverse to the interest rate, and it's liquidity. So you could sell a week later and get more money than you paid because the rates have gone down, or you can sell it and take a haircut because the rates have gone up and the value has gone down. That's liquidity. How fast can I take the thing I bought and sell it to somebody else in a liquid market, lots of buyers, lots of sellers, competitive market, and I go to cash because cash is theoretically safe, okay? Question is what it's cash, but that's a different lecture. So when the Federal Reserve, the Dallas Federal Reserve chair says there's might be some liquidity problems in the debt market, what that means is people who are holding debt may not be able to sell it as quickly as they'd like or for the price they'd like. And there's always price corrections, by the millisecond in the debt markets. But the point is, if you can't go to cash, if you have trouble selling the bonds to going to cash, that's a problem. That's a huge problem because liquidity is important. And if you go in and invest in markets that have less liquidity, a more illiquid market, then you're going to require a higher rate of return because there's risk that you may not be able to get out when you need to get out. Like if you want to sell a bunch of securities, put the money in the bank account because your payroll is due tomorrow, and suddenly you can't. Then the consequences, you can't pay your payroll, you can't pay your vendors. Well, in the government situation, this becomes really problematic. So when you've got a Federal Reserve president noticing, there may be some liquidity issues, people are paying attention to that. And what it's telling us is that these debt markets are becoming so stuffed with debt that at some point it starts to impact the ability of these markets to clear as you would expect them to clear in a free market. And that becomes a really difficult problem, especially when you're the biggest issuer of debt on the planet. And that debt is backed by 330 million Americans, half of whom are under 18. And there's a small group of people, the good faith and on credit of the United States government is based upon the government's ability to tax its citizens to pay off their debts. That's the whole thing. And that works fine when you're in the $1 trillion band. It's a little bit of a high number. And when you start looking at 30, it's a 32, 33, $34 trillion, and you compare that to the people that are stuck with a bill, that becomes a political nightmare. And the answer, what do? They just keep inflating. You've got to keep inflating. And that's why you need to be thinking about how do you take advantage of that. You might want to give Swiss America a call. They might have some ideas. Anyway, thanks for listening to me today. It's going to be a great week. Lots of interesting news. Be safe, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.